Fight it.
As business owners, entrepreneurs,
he went to prison and didn't post for 6 months. How about I stomp on that intro?
Put together projects like these. If you know, you know. Something we really want to do. Unfortunately, taking care of the things we have to take care of first. However, because of viewer support from people like you, we're able to continue doing this. Please consider joining our Patreon and supporting the Burn and Return
Burn and Return podcast.
You can also support it at www.yardbroad.com.
I was ready for the challenge.
Detonation.
You're listening to Burn and Return, a weekly one-hour podcast covering news from the agricultural and turfgrass industries.
You know, when Yard Bro was threatened with federal prison, it was concerning, but he ended up in state prison. He was, Justin?
About to come.
Oh, well, that too. We won't leave it alone. By the way, this is Burn the Turn. This is Burn the Turn.
Everyone.
99, gentlemen. 99.
99. That's wild.
Yeah. So for those of you just joining us, this is a agricultural turf grass podcast. We get around. We basically just have a conversation about current events and also dip into some of the current musings on YouTube in a segment we like to call Joe Knows Turf. And for those of you that haven't been following along, this is our 99th episode. We have been doing this now for, oh gosh, about 3 years. Another show that we call Thirsty Thursday. That's now Wet Mild Wednesdays. And then we like talking so much that we started a second podcast, which is Burn and Return, more related to the current events type stuff. And that's been going on for damn near 3 years too. So it has been one hell of a ride. It will continue until one of us passes away from cyanide poisoning, right? So that's all we can hope for. But gentlemen, how are you? If you know, you got to be in the pre-show for that, and you know that's where you got to go to www.patreon.com/burner and check that out.
It was a dark pre-show.
It was a dark pre-show, but you know,
spicy.
To make it even darker, listen, I wanted to kick it off like this before we got to the headlines. First, how's everybody doing? Then I want to ask you another question real quick. Everybody okay?
Yeah, I'm golden. I'm going to be asked this question real bad. I'm golden. Quick, hit me with it.
Has there ever been a moment where lawns all across the country, mainly on college campuses, have ever been in such focus in the news? And we're not going to be able to really talk about it too much tonight. But lawns got a lot
spicy.
Lawns got a lot of play this week. Got a lot of play this week.
They
a
did.
Lot of traffic. A lot of traffic.
It was a lot of traffic. Rate of recovery here on live news will be a thing to see. And let me ask this: at the universities where we do not see an adequate rate of recovery, what award should we give them? I don't think we award the winners. I think we award the losers. It goes in line with Joe Knows Turf, right? You know, we give an award to the dunce of the week, for the poorly recovered turf grass on national TV protest requirements. We got to give an award for failure.
I think what we'll do is probably just send them a $200 gift certificate to the Golf Course Lawn Academy store. Golf Course Lawn. And that should be enough.
Training session with Lawn Love.
Well, and I was going to say the $200 will be enough to cover the square footage of one tent. That's going to get you from one golf course lawn care store or whatever the fuck it's called. So Ron Henry, never mind. I can't. Oh man, I was going to go to a bad place there. Okay. With that, let's go to headlines.
Headlines.
ZionistLawns.com?
Yikes.
This is just the news. I saw this and, you know, I had to put this in here. A new Marine One helicopter the U.S. spent $5 billion on aren't allowed to carry the president because they could. Why? scorch the lawn. A U.S. Marine Corps VH-92 helicopter. The U.S. spent $5 billion on a fleet of new helicopters. I mean, that number's not staggering, right? Or shocking to anyone. Of course, we'll spend $5 billion on helicopters. But the VH-92 continues to scorch White House lawns, Bloomberg reported Tuesday. This years-long problem has sidelined the helicopters from carrying Biden for now. It's part of a program that the U.S. Spent a shit ton of money on. The rotors and engine exhaust from the Sikorsky-manufactured 92 Patriot will occasionally burn the grass when it lands. It was identified in 2018. Because of this unrelenting problem, the VH-92 is only carrying White House officials or Secret Service personnel instead of the president himself and is restricted to landing on paved surfaces. The executive transport fleet has a couple other helicopters with designation Marine One call sign when the president is aboard. The military sought to replace his aging aircraft with the newer VH-92 systems under the $5 billion program that has secured 20 of them from Lockheed Martin. The lawn scorching problems were first discovered in 2018 during the Trump administration, kickstarting an effort to resolve the issue. Watchdog agency noted in 2020 on the matter that the military had yet to demonstrate that it can meet the requirements to land on the White House South Lawn without causing damage. Heat from the auxiliary power unit and or engine exhaust continue to damage the lawn under certain conditions. The program is studying solutions, including aircraft design changes, lawn surface treatments, and operational procedure changes to minimize the landing zone risk. Okay. Why? Really? Why is this in the fucking news? And why did we spend $5 billion on these helicopters if we're not going to use them?
Because somebody didn't make the... You know why? I'll tell you why. You want to know the real reason why? They didn't have a consultant. They would have known, hey, listen, don't point that exhaust straight down. You know? That's not going to benefit anybody.
Don't. I mean,
just charge out in the atmosphere.
Yeah, point the exhaust aft or skyward, not down. I mean, hey, why do you think...
Does the hot exhaust gases affect lift on the helicopter? If it points...
No, it doesn't.
Telecoma question.
It doesn't. It doesn't, because the exhaust gas does not exit at a velocity such that it contributes to, you know, lift or power. But as Ryan said, if they had had a consultant, they would have baffled the exhaust in the right direction.
I just want to commend everybody involved. Okay. Everybody involved, truthfully. One, for protecting the turf. This is pretty cool to see that
somebody
even $5 billion, so even $5 billion in new defense spending on a helicopter is not good enough because we don't want to mess up the White House lawn. That is kind of cool, right, from a turf perspective. But the only other thing I can say is that what a wonderful way to celebrate No Mow May by spending $5 billion to not have to mow the lawn.
Look, this is the federal government in a nutshell. We're going to sideline a $5 billion project to avoid having to replace $60 in grass. Jay Pink, wink, wink, I just sent you a link. Wink, wink. Do you mind playing this? It's a video.
Oh boy.
It's in our chat. It includes the word pause.
Wink, oh wink. Boy.
I sent this to you. Maybe J Pink sent it to me. I don't know. We'll
Imagine
never know.
What we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Four more years.
Pause. Anyway, glad to see our federal government is very, very qualified and capable of managing $5 billion, more or less the entire, you know, GDP and budget. I mean, you know, what are we 33% over budget? Who cares?
We don't have a budget, actually.
When in doubt, print it out. That's right. We don't have a budget.
Print more money.
Indiana man shoots neighbor over lawn mowing property line dispute. Browns Valley, Indiana. When this said Montgomery County originally, I thought this was Montgomery County, Maryland, which got me really excited. But no, this is Browns Valley, Indiana. He's claiming self-defense after police say he shot his neighbor who was mowing grass near his property line. Timothy Florence, a 53-year-old Crawfordsville resident, was arrested on Sunday by a Montgomery County Sheriff's deputy after they said he shot his neighbor with a handgun. He was booked for attempted murder. Police were called at 8:30 on Sunday to a county road. They found a 55-year-old man who had been mowing near his property line had been shot once with a handgun. The victim was initially looked at on scene by EMS crews before being flown to Indianapolis Area Hospital with life-threatening injuries. He's currently listed in stable but critical condition. Court documents show that a witness on scene recorded the altercation. Florence was holding a leaf blower near the victim, who was on a zero-turn riding lawnmower near the property line. Deputies who saw the video said it showed the victim blowing the cut grass off his property as Florence blew it back towards him with the leaf blower. Florence also reportedly pointed the leaf blower at the victim, blowing air at him. The victim then reportedly began mowing in Florence's direction, almost hitting his leg and causing him to step aside and blow air at the victim again. And this led to the shooting. Florence then went behind the mower to the other side of the victim. Florence drew a handgun from his right side holster, pointed the handgun at the victim's left side, and shot him. A gunshot was heard on the video before the witness began screaming. Anyway, boy, there is, if you ever want to feel good about where we're going as humanity, as humankind, as society, this is one of the great things that can that can give you solace, is that we are all fucked. It's the end of the story. There's nothing about it. We are progressively somehow getting dumber, even though our education, our rates of graduation are increasing, but our grades, that, you know, more people are graduating high school with the inability to read than ever before. What in the world is going on? We have access to education above and beyond the history of the United States, but we are continually evolving into mouth breathing, smooth brained morons. It is phenomenal. And let's I don't know. Do y'all have anything to comment on that? Sorry, the doomer in me's coming to the surface here.
Somebody's been scrolling through Reddit/morbid reality.
It was the toothbrush video. Got me.
Honestly, if you watch the toothbrush video and then you go watch Morbid Reality, that's like Reddit/eye bleach. You know, it's like watching the. It's all tiered, right? You know, you went for the highest degree of difficulty on the internet today, and you almost won. There was. You know, a brief moment where you thought you were going to make it through. We can't talk more about this on the show here, but if you are in the after show, we'll share a link. We'll at least be so cordial as to do that. But anyway, how anything like that devolves into that situation, and I get like the whole thing that bugs the shit out of me in situations like this is like the whole like pride thing, or that guy disrespected me, or this, that, and the other thing, and just to the point that you think that taking somebody's life is the only way to settle that score, like that's really, really fucked up. So hopefully this guy will go to prison, and hopefully it's only for attempted murder. Hopefully the mowing guy makes it through, but hopefully he'll sit there and
rot. Hopefully the mowing guy lives.
Yeah. I mean, and I hate to sound like driver here, but is that not the most boomer thing ever, where one dude on a lawnmower is being hazed by another guy with a leaf blower? And you know, this is in some Nowheresville trailer park, right? Like, man, you keep hitting me, my grass clippings on my property line. And then the other one's like, get the hair out of my mouth. And it leads to a shooting. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'd be better off if. Never mind. I'm not going to say that. One more, just to really make everyone feel awesome. Again, and the reason why I put this in a headline is because I think it's so important to stress this, that when we do this, it is so easy to become lackadaisical about personal protective equipment, not using safety features, whether it be seat belts or roll guards. There is inherent danger and risk with every piece of equipment, every pesticide that we use out in the field. And it's imperative that we do not become complacent at any point while we're out in the field, even if it means purely out of a stance of fatigue that you need to take a break and collect yourself, by God, just do it. Here, we have a toddler that was killed by his dad in a tragic ride-on lawnmower accident, and tragic doesn't even begin to scratch the surface on the horror that this actually is. I mean, this family, I cannot even wrap my mind around the terror, just unbelievable, extreme terror everyone must be going through still right now that they will never, ever get over. A 3-year-old boy was accidentally struck by a ride-on lawnmower that was being driven by his father at their home. Police describe as an unusual tragedy. The child was rushed to a hospital in New South Wales, far south coast, on Saturday, where he later died from catastrophic injuries. They were called at 12:30 after the child was brought him severe injuries. A police spokesman said the father reversed over the child. He didn't see him, and the injuries were not compatible with life. It makes me want to vomit. Even doing this, but again, the reason why I wanted to include it is that maybe, just maybe, the sheer degree of tragedy and just excruciating pain that anyone with half a heart would feel reading this, that I hope it invokes and implores in you to do to make smarter decisions while you're out there, to always be aware of your surroundings. Do not take anything for granted. Do not get complacent. Again, even if it means taking a break, sitting under a shade tree, drinking a bottle of water, and just catch your breath for a moment and come back to reality. It's so easy to get into autopilot, especially when it's 90 degrees with 90% humidity out there. It happens to everybody. I promise. I'm not saying this, that I am not guilty of this. Holy shit. Yeah. I've told the story before that a roll bar saved me from drowning in about a foot of water one time. And it was pure luck, pure luck. The roll bar was up, pure luck. And so again, just everyone, by God, please, please be careful while you're out there. I get it. Time is money, but there are some things you can live with, like making $10 less on the day versus having to live with the fact that you accidentally backed over a child on a lawnmower. And I don't know how anyone could live with that. That's beyond me. So yeah. Everyone take your time.
Take your time, because my only thought is that the times that I have my head on a swivel, Matt, is when I'm operating cutting machinery. That is the time where my head is literally on a swivel, because I never know. And like, you know, in the pre-show, how I was talking about how animals are kind of attracted to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never fails that somebody's dog wants to come and say hi to me. And at that point, because I know that when I see a dog, I kind of stop the mower and stop the rotary scissors. Do you know why?
Yeah, 100%.
Because I want the dog to have its feet, because I'm not sure how I could live with... I was the guy that put a dog through a greens mower. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how I could handle that.
Yeah. People can't. People aren't designed to stomach that. You know what I mean? That's why. No. That's why so many of our soldiers go off to war and come back, and you know, the reintegration back to civilian life is such a terror on so many people, because mm-hmm. I just don't think it's normal or easy or good to have to make that adjustment. And so again, you know, tragedy is tragedy, and having to compartmentalize it and move forward is an unbelievably awful thing to have to do. And shout out to those who can do that. I mean, you're a much bigger man than I am. But again, just to stress the fact, slow down while you're out there. Be aware of your surroundings. Make decisions that are the safest ones you possibly can, because it takes one accident to fuck up a whole lot of people's lives.
Time's so, up. It's over.
Oh, there it is. Thank God. I'm ready to move on from that anyway. Real quick, look, the whole reason that we're able to do this and why we are going to have our 100th episode on Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo! That's, yeah, that's Aldo. My racist joke of the night there, Aldo. por favor. I don't know what else I have. I was going to make a joke about my kids looking Latino, but I'm not going to go there either. But legit, we are able to do this because of listener support. All right. Patreon.com/burner return. Look, if you're of means, by all means, come check it out. If you're not, no harm, no foul. I promise. One thing that I do want to make a point this year is ever so often, I do want to give away a membership to someone who can't afford it. And so, you know, we keep eyes on that, and, you know, occasionally you're going to see some people pop up in the Discord from time to time. You're going to be like, who the fuck is this asshole? And it's probably someone we gifted a membership to because, well, we can't, but there are a lot of you that are of means, and, you know, for the cost that it is to join, your ROI there, it is our goal to make sure that you do get an ROI. And part of that may be business acumen. Part of that might be a business strategy, might be marketing strategy, might be training strategy. It might be product selection. It might be product sourcing. But all of that is covered. Could be a big laugh after a day of being harassed as the lawn boy on Mrs. Jones's property. And you just you need a break from it all before you go back and you know, cut her cherry tree down in her yard or something. Or you maybe need advice on something completely unrelated. Maybe you're having trouble being a dad. Maybe you're having trouble being a husband or a wife, or you're having trouble, trying to get out of whatever day job you're currently in. The one thing I can say about the Discord is that it is a group of people that we all learn from each other. We all have our individual specialties, and everyone there is number one, it has a genuine interest in learning, and number two, to do better and be better in all aspects of their life. And so, for the cost that it is, one thing that I can promise you is that we will work on our side to make sure that you do get an ROI out of that. So check it out, patreon.com/burnhamreturn. With that, how about we check out everyone's favorite segment of the show?
Joe!
Joe!
I'm Joe! I'm Ben Gibbs!
Joe!
Boy, ever does Joe know turf. And Joe again, if you're joining us on episode 99, I can't remember when we started doing this segment. It was 50 or more shows ago. It was not an OG segment. It was born out of something that we do on Wednesday, or what was Thursday, now Wednesday nights, in our after show. And that is merciless shit slinging. I mean, there are no holds barred.
It's bad.
This, we we do attempt to contain ourselves and try to offer a positive and uplifting message about what we do see here. It's hard sometimes to split that just right. And God bless, you know, Dr. Shaddix has done a much better job than we could. Without any emotion.
It's absurd.
Very, very limited emotion to go through and take apart some of the things that we see, kind of what we thought this would be at the start of it. So,
but I'm gonna say something about that.
I'm just a better human. Okay.
Dr. Shaddix has it easy because whatever stuff we shit on in Joe Knows Turf and the After Show, what I do know about it is that most of the statements made are not backed up by any evidence, so it's very easy for Dr. Shaddix to just sit there and dispassionately trash it all.
I will say this: the way that he can do it so constructively, I think that is a talent in and of itself. Yeah.
It's constructive. However, at the same time, I'm going to also push back on it in that a lot of times it is a little bit, for lack of a better description, myopic and pedantic.
I don't know what either of those words mean, and so I'm just going to say,
but it's not,
you're probably right, Ray.
It's myopic and pedantic, and it doesn't necessarily translate out into the real world, because I know between the three of us, we tell these guys like it is in the real world.
With that, speaking of being myopic and having all sharp objects and your shoelaces taken away from you, let's talk about how to with Doc.
Oh no.
Thick and green. Wow, howdy. Doc looked, oh, never mind.
So it's quite often that I talk about the push zone. And what is the push zone? It really applies
full
to
force. Chuck, thank you for adding that, because you, when you do get to the push zone, and I was going to comment here about how Matt and Ray frequently find themselves in the push zone, but just not quite the same one that Doc is going to talk about here. All right, let's go ahead and go.
Bermuda and Georgia or warm season grasses that have a tendency to spread and come out of dormancy. It applies a little bit to cool season
grasses.
Have a
tendency.
But
pause.
I would say more.
So, okay. Here's the deal.
Tendency. Come out of dormancy.
So if you missed that, and I apologize for shitting all over that intro, but I had to. What Doc has just suggested, Ray, is that the push zone is apparently when warm season grasses, including Bermuda and Zoysia, which have a tendency to spread, that there is a need around this time of the year to push them with fertilizer. So let's let him talk about why we should push warm season grasses.
Let's see why. Why?
So it applies to warm season. We'll talk about that today, and I'll show you how to work that into your system. So here we go. So I'm kind of running around tying up loose ends before I actually head down to the beach house. And down at the beach house, if you guys follow my channel, I basically abandoned that problem.
If you guys follow my channel, all you dumb motherfuckers that paid for my shit bought that beach house for me. But I will not tell
with
you.
With his insurance plans that he was selling. Do you remember when he started doing insurance videos, like life insurance?
Yeah, it was like a new, like reverse mortgage annuities soccer
what about
coaching
his fireproof
videos?
Pouches for lithium batteries? I remember that. What
or
about
his soccer
coaching?
Training videos? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I only fireproof pouch. I knew about.
Come over here, Stacy. Let me see you kick this right between those.
Sheila needs a fireproof pouch.
Oh, I bet she's got, I bet you her pouch is very fireproof. All right, let's keep going.
Property for a year and a half while we have redone this whole property. So that means I got a project ahead of me. I got to fix an ugly lawn down there. My problem down there is we started with Zoysia, came up beautiful, and then we had Bermuda coming in. So I've kind of just let it go, and I'm going to have a mix of Bermuda and Zoysia. I had the wife, actually, when she was down there a couple weeks ago, I had her put down some Bermuda seed. So it's going to transition probably.
You fucking overseeded Zoysia your Zoysia with
now
Bermuda
50-50,
seed?
Probably more into
yikes.
Bermuda lawn down there. Ooh. So follow me, and you'll see that transition. Hit subscribe. Make sure you subscribe.
However, if Doc wasn't such an ass.
Oh, hang on. Let him go here, because I what he is going to talk about in this video is going to clearly define why he experienced that transition in his yard. But I want to let him tee it up, and then we'll actually hit the 330-yard drive here. But go ahead.
What
tee
is
it
the
up,
push
Doc.
Zone? Nature will tell your grass when to wake up. It's not that we wake our grass up earlier by doing certain things, but once it wakes up, we can definitely have an impact on what happens with our grass. And one of the things we want to do, and I hear a lot of time, is Doc, I've got my grass is coming up and it's green and it's growing, but it's not spreading enough. And I want it to spread and get really thick. That's all about energy. That's really what it comes down to, is really pushing the energy
Joules,
and growth in your Bermuda
energy.
And in your Zoysia. I say this all the time. There's a certain time, and that time is probably right about now, when temperatures start to get into, when you start to touch into those 80s, that's the growth zone. Look, for Bermuda, now I'm in Georgia, and if you're in the southeast, May is going to be, it's going to start at probably the end of May or sometime in May. You got May, April, and June. That's a really strong push time. So what we do is we put down a base fertilizer. We put down PGF Complete. The PGF nice. Complete mm-hmm. is your standard maintenance fertilizer. It's a broad spectrum of nutrients that your lawn's going to need unless you get a soil test and it says something else. You put down PGF Complete. That's going to give all the balancing nutrients that your lawn needs to function properly. Because sometimes if it doesn't have enough phosphorus or if it doesn't have enough this, it can struggle to bring up that nitrogen. It can struggle to process the nutrients. That's why we put down.
Wait. Did he just say nitrogen is limited by the other nutrients?
That is correct, actually.
Yes.
That's what he just said.
That is the most ass-backwards thing I might have heard today. And I watched a guy brush his teeth with a toothbrush that came out of his rectum. all right.
Not live.
Can't get
not
more
live.
Ass backward
not,
than that.
Not live.
But then I finished my shopping at Publix and I went about my day.
Aldi.
Aldi.
It's Aldi. Worse.
Ouch, Jesse. That is a burn. That's a damn burn right there.
all right, keep going here, Doc, because you are teeing yourself up just perfectly.
But there comes a point where we want to push that lawn with basically just nitrogen.
Yeah.
And we just want to push that growth. And that's where DGL comes in. And this is what I've been talking about this year.
What is this?
So we put down PGF Complete, and grass starts to come up. It's greening. It's growing nicely. But we want to push it, make it really grow and thicken up. And you want to see that result fast. Now go out and put about maybe 2 weeks later, put out a coat of DGL. DGL, I asked Anderson's to specifically formulate because it was almost impossible to find. And it's a super fine particle of all fast-release nitrogen. That's all it is, basically. It has a little bit of iron, but it's mostly just nitrogen. So it's not slow release. It's not going to release over a period of 4 to 6 weeks. Once you put that out...
No, it is once not you start just your iron and urea. Because, gentlemen, if you are using ferrous sulfate, and if you want it to play nicely with urea... chances are you're probably using ferrous sulfate monohydrate versus heptahydrate. So when you're talking about the ferrous sulfate molecule, right, you're going to have a certain degree of H2O
water
attached to that molecule, mm-hmm. right? And so when you have the green ferrous sulfate, which would be heptahydrate, you'll notice that it gets fairly tacky, easy. And versus the monohydrate, so hepta, meaning how many molecules is hepta, Ray? Is that is that two molecules of water attached to one ferrous? Okay, how many is
five?
Five. You hear that? Five.
Five.
So every
five molecules
for every So there you go. That's a fair amount of water that's with it. And your maximum iron concentration on heptahydrate is 20% iron, versus monohydrate is going to be 30% iron. Okay, so we have 6%. Okay, and if it is a 30% iron in it, we've got six. So that's roughly, what was it? Is that 20% of the bag? Am I doing that right? I'm doing this all off my head.
I think that might be 20% iron. That sounds about right.
So, and then we've got 80% urea, so 80 times 0.46. So that would be a 3600 with 6% iron. However, we have a 2500 with 6% iron. So what that means is that there is a fairly significant percentage of this bag that is also limestone. It's just limestone.
Or fillers, or gravel, right?
yeah, it's not lime. This isn't ag lime. This is just limestone, right? So anyway, again, this is one of those things that is like, oh yeah, it only has these two ingredients in the bag. Well, you're a fucking liar, as a matter of fact. And it doesn't take a whole lot here. And I think Dr. Shaddix is going to be doing a video shortly, or at some point, that talks about how to understand labels. And I really enjoy doing that, especially as a manufacturing piece of it. There's a lot of finagling that goes on with labels to make things appear like they're not. So anyway, he here, of course, is, you know, one of these dunces that goes right into, you know, the dunce category. Go ahead, Doc. Keep talking, and let's figure out why your Zoys is now 50% Bermuda, because I already know the answer, but do you?
Irrigation process, and once you get a rainfall, all of a sudden you're going to see that lawn really start to energize. Now, we've proven this time and time again. We've done these test stripes out here, so let me put up some of the test stripes. I did it in another video. And every time we put down DGL and we started watering it,
I can't wait until Shaddix gets a hold of this one. But go ahead. Put down fertilizer. I watered it.
And within probably 6 to 10 days, you're going to see that grass, wherever you put a stripe or wherever you put DGL, all of a sudden it's going to turn dark green and it's going to grow twice as fast as the other grass around it.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Time and time again.
Now that's what you do with plain 4600. Doc, why not do it with plain old 4600? See what happens, because here's what I was told about applying iron in the acidic soils found in Georgia. Iron doesn't do a lot when you have typical Georgia soil.
As a manufacturer, if you want to induce a color response from ferrous sulfate, it has to be homogenized with either an acid or a strong chelate. Don't tell anybody.
Let's get back to two things, two main points here. First, Matt, can you expound upon why Homeboy's lawn is transitioning more and more to Bermuda?
Okay, so here's the thing, is that anyone who has maintained Zoysia for any period of time, especially in a professional capacity that extends beyond just your singular home property, where we know Ray has maintained many hundreds and hundreds of acres of Zoysia versus Doc here, who has maintained 2,000 square feet of it, 5,000, 8,000 square feet of it. And Doc has maintained how many lawns across his career? 10, maybe, if you take into account all his neighbors, versus the three of us on this panel. Like, it's so many, it's thousands of acres that we've managed. And one of the things you start to notice is that, and we'll say this purely from an anecdotal standpoint, there's a lot of data that actually backs this up. So when you're looking at a body of evidence that's in published information, you also see it too, is that Zoysia does not like the same nitrogen amounts that Bermuda does. It doesn't. So if you consider that, Bermuda is in the push zone, as he will steal his own verbiage here, and therefore Zoysia must also be in the push zone, and you begin using things like, hammering it with a shit ton of urea, to encourage the lateral spread that you really need to get out of your Zoysia grass, it ends up becoming counterintuitive, because you're inviting a lot of secondary effects to come in and create weak turf, whether it be from large patch, whether it be from take all root rot, or any of the other host of diseases that can end up affecting it, Pythium root rot. And what ends up happening is that as you have turf grass decline and you're in an area that that Bermuda grows just wild and naturally, and any place it finds an opportunity to, well, then it moves into it. If you have a badass stand of Zoysia, chances are you're not going to get a whole lot of encroachment from Bermuda out of it. It might be a little bit of give and take, but to start to lose upwards of 50% of it, that is a tall tale sign that somewhere along the way, you, the turf manager, fucked up.
I got another piece for this net. Here's what I've seen, in my years of maintaining Zoysia. What always happens when I see the following things moving in on a Zoysia turf, when I see spurge, when I see nutsedge, and when I see wild seed variety Bermuda moving into a Zoysia turf, that usually tells me that we have a nematode issue.
That's another good point too. And you can, you spot it based on the growth characteristics too, right? Because you got to think, like, normally Zoysia stands upright so much that if you have spurge in it, right? Like Spurge normally forms like, you know, kind of like a prostrate spurge. You know, it's got a center point and it just kind of mats out over it, right? And you think about like really, really hard compactive where the carts drive over an area or your car drives over an area and you get a piece of spurge in it and it just kind of, you know, covers an area that four 6 inches in diameter. Mm-hmm. And then to think about it, like, how would that exist in Zorja grass? I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Zorja would fucking prop it up and it'd be, you know, in an odd Zoysia angle.
Zoysia would be doing the following to the spurge. In normal circumstances, the Zoysia growth would literally push that shit straight out of the lawn.
Yeah.
I kid you not. I've seen it happen.
No, you're right. You're right.
But if the Zoysia is weak due to nematode invasion, Bermuda can take over. Because let me let you in on a little bit of inside baseball. Common Bermuda is rather resistant to nematode damage. I'm talking about common. I'm not talking about things like Tiff Dwarf, Tiff Weight, Tiff Eagle, Tiff Green. I'm not talking about those varieties, but your common wild Bermuda is very tough and resilient in the face of nematode. So, you know, when I saw that first picture of Doc's lawn, I was already thinking, man has nematodes and all the crap that he's throwing on that lawn ain't going to help.
Could be that. The other thing too is that, you know, particularly it was in Georgia. The first time I saw it was in Birmingham, Alabama. But one of those picture perfect, just absolutely gorgeous looking brown patch events in Zoysia grass, and I've actually got a picture on my phone here that I am trying to pull up, and I mean it is so picture perfect that you're just like, wow. And the whole reason I took the picture was because I was thinking to myself, like, I ought to send this in so it makes it into a textbook somewhere. But again, it waylaid the grass so aggressively that it in that area that had been annihilated by the large patch, basically, the only thing that grew in it was, Bermuda. You would guess it. Prostate spurge and Bermuda.
Prostate spurge and Bermuda. Yeah, that's literally what I saw, Matt, before I got a handle on the large patch epidemic here in Hawaii. I'd see these Zoysia lawns die off from large patch, and then what would replace the Zoysia was common Bermuda, spurge, and nutsedge, concentrating in the areas that were killed by the large patch. Go figure.
Here we go. Oh, focus, you fuck. Come on. Come on. Focus. Focus.
Okay. Got it. Got it, yeah. Matt.
It's not focusing, but do you see this? Do you see these beautiful, halo-like brown patches there? I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous. And I'll tell you, that is actually my fault, right? And when I'll never forget my bosses at the time when I was at Fairway, and they were talking to me about, you know, treating Zoysia grass outside of Memphis. Zoysia in Memphis is much more forgiving. I don't know why. And I think it's, one, it's all basically Meyer Z52. Because whenever we have an ice storm, all the emerald dies out with the ice storms. So you only have emerald really left in the Memphis areas, like down south in Mississippi, right across the state line. So that's really the only place you find it. But in Memphis proper, it's all Z52, and it's all been treated by you know, True Green for years and years and years, which has just been hammered with nitrogen, right? So it honest to God, if you get weak-footed with it. And I think if you go back and you listen to my old videos, and I say, if you act funny around Zoysia, it'll act funny around you, right? And that was one of those things that in Memphis, you had to be particularly aggressive with it. But I was warned, if you take this to Alabama, if you take this to Georgia, and you apply that same level of bravado to it in your management practices, in your nitrogen management practices, it's going to come back to bite you in the form of disease. And that was one of the ones because, again, you know, had a bad ice storm and I was trying to enter Zoysia into the push zone. And just it was battling nonstop outbreaks of large patch. And of course, that's where you start. That particular instance, I was lucky because it was under a tree, but there was other sections of the yard that had beautiful patches in it like that. And of course it was. It was Bermuda that was popping up in all of it and a lot of spurge. And it was just a nightmare. Actually, then later in the season, it was a lot of goose grass showed up too, which is a whole other thing. But all of this to say is that Doc did a good job here of demonstrating exactly what not to do with this funny little catchphrase of the push zone. I get it. You want to maximize growth for lateral spread in a newly seeded Bermuda lawn or a Bermuda lawn that has thin areas or a Bermuda lawn that was affected by spring dead spot. You got to juice it and goose it a little bit. I get it. You can't apply that same philosophy to Zoysia grass or to St. Augustine or to centipede. That is uniquely a Bermuda thing, and it begins and it ends there. And you just got to get it out of your head. But
do you know what I do?
Thanks to this asshole here. Just doing whatever you want. If you're in Georgia, you got to get in the push zone. You got to get your head down in the trenches because long hair bullets are flying all around you, man.
Yeah, because do you know what I actually do to Zoysia that I want to thicken up? This is going to sound counterintuitive, Matt. You know what I do to it? I start low rate cutlass on it.
PGR it.
Yeah, I PGR it because what I want to do is I want to limit the vertical growth and direct more of that energy towards the lateral growth and the roots. Last thing I do to Zoysia is come at it with high rates of AMS or urea. That's a no-no.
Probably, especially in areas where you're dealing with Zoysia grass growing in, you know, 5.1, 5.2 pHs too, right? You're not going to make a whole lot of headway there in those types of growing conditions.
5.1 to 5.2 pH. That's going to be another piece because here are the two places where I see Zoysia absolutely shit the bed. One, if pH is under 6, it has problems for me. Other place where Zoysia becomes temperamental is if pH is over 7. So either end of that spectrum is problems. And here we have Dum Dum here. He wants to hammer the grass with nitrogen, and he hasn't even talked about what his soil pH is.
Yeah, and he won't because again, you know his model to get people to buy this product is, you know, how do you simplify it so much that it appeals to as many potential buyers as possible? It's like, oh, you have a warm season lawn. This is what you need to do. You need DGL to get it
in the push zone.
With DGL. Huh. DGL equals the push zone. That's what you're looking for. You need to apply this. And so it's scumbaggery through and through, top to bottom, left to right. He created his own problem I don't think he's even aware that he likely created his own problem. And he may not. It could be a nematode issue too, but of course he doesn't have the experience to be able to identify that either. So he's just going to go ahead and steer into it and be like, well, I guess if he didn't do right on that, then I might as well just overseed it with Bermuda seed anyway. Which, by the way, overseeding Zoysia grass is tough to begin with. That's not an easy thing. That is a very, very dense turf grass. A Bermuda grass seed is a very, very small seed with not a lot of energy in it. So good luck if you think that reality is going to happen, that you're going to germinate a whole bunch of Bermuda seed in a Zoysia lawn. You're not. number one, you're a fucking idiot. Number two, you're a double fucking idiot. And then we'll seal it off with overseeding like a complete and total fucking idiot. So kudos to you there, Doc. Man, you really fucked yourself on this, moron.
I have a third way out of his Bermuda and Zoysia conundrum, Matt. You might not like this.
An out?
Yeah, I have an out for him, but then it's going to be a unpleasant and painful out.
Pilots.
Oh, better. Smoke the Zoysia with Ethyphemisate, Tenacity, and Sencor.
Yeah, Tenacity and Sencor would be a good little combination there, too.
Sapow!
Sorry, Doc, you don't deserve Zoysia grass. Get off my lawn.
And there you have it.
There it
All
is.
Right, now on to this week's burns. Really is hard. I feel bad because after the whole Yarbrough thing, it's hard to top any Genesis turf with, you know, hey, here's a guy who's doing, you know, horrific things to his lawn, and he's also a child molester. It's hard to rise above that level. So
it is.
I was ready for the challenge.
What was that again, Justin? Lawn lover?
I was ready for the challenge.
That sounded like you were.
Maybe Doc just needs more Mexican dudes to be hand throwing seed, Bermuda seed on his Zoysia lawn.
They were not.
It'll then grow in.
They weren't Mexican. They were Georgian.
Oh,
guess my drift.
I hear you.
And then and listen, we're not. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, there's no coming back from that one. Just go ahead.
Homeowner seeks advice after landscaping company makes concerning claim about city's policies. This would be an absolute nightmare to hear. Something about biocides. One homeowner and HOA president was appalled after a landscaping professional told them they might be required to use toxic weed killers throughout their community, whether they wanted it or not. According to a recent post in the No Lawn subreddit, this Raleigh, North Carolina Redditor is also an HOA president for a smallish townhome community. I expressed a desire to have our landscaping company stop spraying all the biocides on our property. And he said that our city might require them to spray whether we want them to or not, they said in the post. Biocides? Is this possibly a thing? And how would I go about verifying this one way or the other? Members of the No Lawns community tend to be against herbicide use to preserve 100% turf grass lawns. Instead, they support a wide variety of low-cost, low-maintenance, eco-friendly lawn alternatives, including native plants, clover, buffalo grass, and xeriscaping. Low-cost is a strong insinuation there, by the way. These options save water, which is good for your wallet and the environment. And many also support pollinators, which are beneficial to wild plants, gardens, and farms. Unfortunately, many HOAs have stood in the way of these lawn upgrades in order to keep their neighborhoods looking uniform. Sometimes even growing a few native wildflowers means changing HOA rules. But this time, the HOA wasn't the culprit. According to commenters, it probably wasn't the city either. As a fellow resident of Raleigh, I've never heard of any requirement to use biocides, and I'm pretty sure they aren't, said one user. My guess is that using chemicals is easier than the alternative. Or as another user put it, sounds like you need a new landscaping company. I'm also in a smallish community outside of Raleigh, and this would be an absolute nightmare to hear. One side of our community has landscaped as part of their HOA dues, so I feel like they would be at most at risk for mandatory spraying. It's still scary, though. Did it end there? Okay. First off, gentlemen, can we get a definition for... When you hear biocide, I want everyone to please understand, you know, preface this with the fact that when you hear biocide, what do you think?
I think of, if I'm remembering school correctly, is a biocide could be a chemical and or like some type of organic substance or whatever, right? That could potentially kill a pest, pathogen, what have you.
Yep. So what it says here, it is a chemical substance or a microorganism intended to destroy, deter, or render harmless or exert. Anyway, what they have done in this here is they are using biocide and pesticide interchangeably. They're using a plant protection product, they're just assuming that a biocide is a pesticide. for most of us in the industry, when we hear biocide, we're probably thinking like some sort of bacteria that has been modified to either act as a pesticide. So, for example, there are some pesticide-labeled forms of chitosan that is used as a nematode agent. There are other biological strains that are out there that are used as nematicides or other disease mm-hmm. suppressants. So when I hear that, that's what I think. And what I would like to know here is, are they up in arms because their HOA is specking in a natural or organic product to control a pest issue, and they have interpreted biocide as a pesticide or some sort of synthetic pesticide, and has them just absolutely melting down over it because they have no spot?
I kind of have a third definition, that because I deal with biocides, because you know, when somebody tells me biocide, I'm immediately thinking things like chlorine or metal compounds or else peroxide. And the reason why I'm thinking of those things is because when somebody tells me biocide, I am thinking of materials that are universally toxic to a wide range of organisms, be it plant, insect, or microbial. That's the definition of a biocide, is that it is a broad spectrum. Everything goes. Think chlorine, Matt, when somebody says biocide.
So I just looked at a product the other day, a product label that was a biological nematicide using chitosan, mm-hmm. and it stated mm-hmm. biocide on the label, and that's why it was burned into my brain, and it got me thinking. You know, what are these people actually talking about?
No, you know what I think they're thinking? I think they're trying to make usage of registered herbicides and insecticides to sound more toxic than it actually is, because I do also have some insight in that. You know, a lot of cities and townships, the city itself has a code that areas not contain high weeds. So, you know what this HOA is literally asking for? This HOA is literally asking for their HOA to turn into a snapshot of Hawaii, mowed down shit. That's what they want.
All I hear is kindling.
I hear kindling too, because you know, high weeds. My temptation is to spray it with diesel and strike a match. That's your biocide.
You know, I want to make it clear here. Look, if you are the kind of person that wants to landscape your lawn instead of having grass areas, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I love it. There are people out there that have the artistic vision to be able to do it in such a way that it looks so good that it immediately invokes like a sense of awe in me, right? I mean, I'm just like, wow, that is impressive. However, I think what in reality ends up happening is these people, you know, go get like, you know, oh, I love Morning Glory, and they go get a pack of seeds from Walmart and just start throwing it all over the place. And next thing you know, you have just vines growing like chaos, and out from underneath the layers and layers of Morning Glory vines that are growing, You have fucking snakes and all kinds of shit that are jumping out at you whenever you walk past the property. You know, they ate whatever snake is residing in there, ate Miss Lily's chihuahua.
Cat.
And yeah. And you know, and it's like, is that it, you, look, you tried and you fucked up bad. Like, this looks terrible. I promise HOAs, if you had a bedazzled landscape without a single square foot of turf grass that looked good, the HOA is going to be like, damn, you did you nailed it. Like, lights out. You're a badass human being right there. So, you know, again, this is one of those things that just absolutely chaps my ass, because it's not enough to say, hey, I enjoy having a landscaped only lawn with no turf areas. It's if you have a turf grass area, you are a proponent of biocides. And Megiddy pointed out here, bio equals life, side equals killer. Therefore, you are a killer of life. And that is what it has been reduced to, is that lawns in America has developed a culture that is growing. This is a growing culture of you are a killer of life. And there couldn't be anything further from the truth. And it is unbelievable.
So I got to think about what I applied the other day. And this was not to a lawn. This was to somebody's landscaped garden area. And what I applied is literally way more scary than what I routinely apply to a lawn. Because do you know what it was? This was some Dyquat and sulfentrazone. That's how I kill nutsedge in landscaped areas.
Wow. Colonizer.
You know, one of the big things here is that, you know, we have consistent evidence that shows, you know, people are like, oh, you know, you're killing your carbon in the soil and so on and so forth every time you plant nitrogen. And I don't have this window open, but J-Pink, you can feel free to post this into the chat there. And it goes through a series of data points, of published data that shows that actually applying synthetic nitrogen will increase the rate
increase
of accumulation
your soil, organic,
soil
matter.
Organic matter. Yeah. Wow. Huh. That's amazing. And then also, when it comes to glyphosate, you know, glyphosate is one of the ones that glyphosate's going to kill everybody. Wait, let me find this.
Glyphosate's going to kill everybody. Well, then why the hell was I so nervous opening the Dyquat bottle then?
That's a good question.
I don't have that kind of nervousness, you know, if it's just glyphosate, where I'm looking at the Dyquat bottle, I'm thinking, oh, shit, you know, is today going to be the day?
Yeah, let's see, where am I on this? Jeez, there are so many. Here's another one. We did not detect an effect of glyphosate treatment on the relative abundance of soil organisms. Soil microbial communities and diverse agro ecosystems exposed to the herbicide glyphosate and saw no reduction. So the idea that it kills the soil is also
Do you know what does kill the soil? Salt and acetic acid.
That is
very destructive to microbial life.
That's incredible.
Also biocides.
Yeah, that's a biocide,
yeah,
right?
That's true. You know, it's funny, and the whole reason I put that out there is that, you know, you're going to see like Mother Jones, you know, talk about how Monsanto's Roundup herbicide damages the soil. However, J-Pink, I'm going to put another one here that we can add to our body of evidence. Fuck, that is not the link I wanted to do. Let me do this one instead. And again, you know, when you read articles like that in the news, and then you start searching for actual literature, and then come to find out that, well, damn. It actually did not have a negative effect on microbiology. So arm yourself with reality and don't let these people affect you emotionally. Consult the data. Coke always has such a bad rap, and I'm curious, you know, here we have another one that says in Iowa, a fertilizer plant purchased by Coke, farmers and consumers lose. So by Coke buying this, everyone is fucked, basically, is what we're getting. So let's see what they have to say. Iowa farmers and consumers together are leading the call for federal and state officials to investigate the pending sale of OCI's global nitrogen fertilizer plant in Weaver, Iowa, to the fertilizer Goliath Coke Industries. Now, the FTC chair, Lena Khan, will come to Central Iowa on Saturday, April 20th, to listen to Iowans about the proposed sale and monopolies in agriculture, especially in the fertilizer industry. The plant was built with more than $500 million of taxpayer support. The state's largest ever subsidy was incorrectly justified by Iowa lawmakers as a way to increase competition in the nitrogen fertilizer market. At that time, Iowa Farmers Union joined community leaders and citizens opposing the subsidy. The proposed sale to Koch would reduce competition, artificially increase prices paid by farmers, and ultimately increase food prices for all Iowans. It is another painful example of public investments being misused to increase monopolies. We desperately need more competition. That's a strong statement right there, and I just want to reiterate this for as we move further along in the article. It would artificially increase prices paid by farmers and ultimately increase food prices for all Iowans. All right, we're just going to store that away in the back of our head. Presently, four corporations, Koch, Nutrien, CF Industries, and Yara, control more than 75% of the nitrogen supply. At this level of concentration, economists agree that market forces no longer work effectively to keep prices competitive. Fertilizer is one of the ag sectors where anti-competitive concentration is being challenged by the Farmers Union ongoing Fairness to Farmers campaign. The Iowa Farmers Union, along with 18 national ag and policy organizations, is calling on Iowa and federal officials to block the pending sale of OCI's global nitrogen fertilizer plant at Weaver to industry giant Koch Industries. The deal would be bad for Iowa farmers, bad for Iowa's economy, and ultimately bad for consumers paying high food prices. It is a slap in the face for taxpayers who invested about $550 million, as well as $1.2 billion of Iowa's finance authority bonds to build a plant now known as the Iowa Fertilizer Company, or IFCO. The stated original justification for the tax subsidies was to increase competition in the nitrogen fertilizer supply, critical input for corn, the Midwest major crop. In fact, the Branstad Reynolds administration cited Koch Industries market dominance as the reason why the investment was necessary. Now we are on the cusp of those tax dollars being used to increase Koch's anti-competitive stranglehold. To safeguard our economy and indeed our democracy, our enforcers must prevent dominant firms from capitalizing on the investments made with public resources. The deal, this deal is yet another example of the consequences of short-sighted public policy, focusing only on imagined benefits and ignoring the pitfalls. Federal regulators of the FTC and the Department of Justice must step in immediately and investigate the sale. On Saturday, the Iowa Farmers Union will host a community listening session with FTC Chair Khan, and it will be held at gatherings, blah, blah, blah. All Iowans are invited to come in and share their opinion. Okay. So they make some pretty charged statements there without really any evidence as to how that's going to happen. First off, if we want to say that the argument that, that none of these subsidies should have happened from the get-go, I'm not going to argue against that. Yeah. I don't think the government should be in the business of building private businesses or funding private businesses, right? Mm-hmm. When you start getting crony capitalism like that, that's how shit ends up going
picking
sideways,
winners.
Right? Yes. And
picking
so,
winners.
Now here we are in this situation, and now we like, okay, Koch wants to come in and buy it, but what exactly was OCI up to? Oh, they were taking monumental fucking losses. Monumental losses. The plant was not profitable. They were about to go under. And that means that $500 million investment by the taxpayers actually did go to a complete and total waste that was then going to be further subsidized by the bankruptcy proceedings on the back end of it, right? Or, or they could sell it to Koch and keep it operational, and Koch, with their level of expertise when it comes to operating urea facilities or ammonia facilities, could turn it into something profitable. If they were just looking for cheap nitrogen, well, you got cheap nitrogen and you also got a business that went out of business. So if you say that Koch stepping in is going to artificially inflate the prices, or are they going to do it at a point where now the plant is operating profitably and can be there for a longer period of time, and you still get the cost savings of not having to ship material up the Mississippi and then over to you? I don't know exactly what they're selling.
Well, I was going to say, if not them, then who? Like what happens here?
And also,
it's either them or CF Industries or Yara.
Right.
Or somebody else, and I got some inside baseball on Koch. Yeah, I got some little bit of inside baseball on Koch Industries. Our very own Aaron Gillespie has told me that the way that Koch Industries runs their plant is next level.
Oh, really?
And yeah, because
in a positive way.
Yeah, these guys, they have, you know, operating procedures and safety down. Because you know what, Matt? I have not heard of a Coke facility blowing up or catching fire. I don't remember ever hearing of
that. Not a fertilizer facility, no.
No.
Possibly
yeah,
in some of their other segments, but not a fertilizer plant, no.
Not the fertilizer. And the reason why I'm pointing to that is, do you know what would give me the heebie-jeebies, Matt? Is if I were sitting next to tons of ammonia gas or nitrates, mm-hmm. that would give me the heebie-jeebies, okay? But
where there's ammonia, there's typically nitrates.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is that maybe it's a good thing that Coke takes in this plant and gets this plant up to speed. I call that a net win for everybody.
I agree. And I can say this too. Coke likes to do fair business. And I think that is a very direct way to put it. I haven't worked with a ton of the big boys, but I can say that every business transaction I've had with Coke was always fair and clean and quick. And they want to do business with you. Right. And mm-hmm. I can't say that for every other player in the space. I've never done business with Nutrien. I've never done business with CF Industries. I've done business with Yara, and I know at the time, you know, they were real new with some of their product launches in the U.S. And so there were some hiccups there. But I will say, by and large, like Coke genuinely like wants to do business with you, and it doesn't matter if you're small, and it doesn't matter if you're big. However it goes, that's the one thing that of all the sales reps I worked with, Scott, who I worked with when I was in Kentucky, even though small as we were, still came down, visited, shook my hand. You know, how can I help you? Can I help you grow? You know, what is it you need? Are you looking for investment? You know, we have a team that all they do is specialize in investments. Do you need research help? I mean, it was nuts. I was like, man, who these? These are the scary Koch brothers you hear about? Because it sounds like they want to win. And they want to help you win. And if you win, they win, right? And that's the only thing. I've never been baited into a bad deal with them or anything of the sort. So again, I take everything that is coming in this article right here with 100% a grain of salt. I get it. There is a dwindling number of ammonia manufacturers in the United States. 100%. I see it. I do. However, one of the other things that we also have the ability to do is import cheap urea from overseas. And we put a monumental tariff on that to limit the amount of imported urea. So if you really wanted to increase competition, drop the fucking tariffs.
And I think that's the whole thing.
Before that's a right versus left thing that started under Trump. Traditionally, the right is the one who are anti-tariff people, but that was a Trump thing that it started, and that's why it hasn't gone away under Biden. And you're still seeing on ammonium sulfate right now a 20% dump fee on it. That's part of their fucking tariff. That's crazy.
What were you going to say to me? Inside baseball too is that
what you said on that?
Is that remember now? Trump was a Democrat long before he was a Republican. Okay.
Yeah. Carried a little bit of that with him.
Yeah. No, he carried a lot of that with him. So anybody that says, ooh, Trump, MAGA, you know what I have to say to them? Get fucked, because Trump was and still is a Democrat. So there's that. And unfortunately, in his, you know, protectionism, do you know what Trump failed to do when he could? Trump failed to clean out the EPA and all of these other alphabet agencies that are the reason why only a few very big operators can even exist in the regulatory environment put out in the United States.
That's they true, too.
Do not necessarily put everything on, oh, it's about tariffs. No, it is not about tariffs, because the managerial class in the United States does not want chemical manufacturing to exist here. Why do you think all of our chemicals are all made in China right now? Why?
I'm going to take this a step further, Ray. Look at the sectors. Look at some of the largest investment groups in the United States, right? Like, Silicon Valley probably leads the way when it comes to investments, right? And they have this model, and there's a reason why, you know, they do not invest in manufacturing, right? They want sexy, fast money, 10x ROI in 3-year types of deals. And that is exactly what they go for. I'm not going to point too much of the politics, but what are the politics coming out of Silicon Valley? I'm just curious. We don't have to say it out loud. I think everybody knows what that is, right? And and they continually favor this one segment, right? And then you kind of get the spillover through grants and shit that move on into some of your other sectors, like whether it be like renewable energy. And but again, when you're talking about renewable energy investment, I'm not going to do it, because I'll just end up in an extreme wormhole. But point being is that there's a large reason why the sectors that would or could invest in manufacturing or chemical operations don't. And it is due to the regulatory nightmare that exists around it. And it ultimately makes it non-profitable unless you're at a monumental scale. And I'm talking about a scale where you can't produce 100,000 tons of urea profitably in the United States. And that's sad. You can't do it. No. You got to be 300,000 tons, 500,000 tons, 1,000,000 tons of urea in order to do it profitably in the United States, because economy of scale versus all the regulatory red tape that goes into it. So yeah, you're exactly right. You're not going to get the small people involved in it, because just the upkeep on the red tape side of it and the costs associated with it through permitting and everything else is just, it's unfathomably expensive. It's prohibitively expensive and unrealistic. So anyway, that's it.
Yeah. I'm
curious, what were you going to say? I did stomp on you. And I want to know. You're the voice of reason, so that's why I want to hear it.
I think it's exactly what you said, that it's as if people here are crying about the big bad wolf, and certainly we have no problem shitting on large multinational corporations.
Mosaic. Yeah. However,
I think, right? However,
the reality. Yeah.
The reality is that we're in a situation where we are not. The velocity of change does not suggest that we are ready to do this on our own, right? And Matt just alluded to. And so to sit here and say, well, because we don't like it, you should do it, is just burying your head in the sand to what's actually going on in the world. And Matt makes a great point about the tariffs too. There's absolutely no way, shape or form that is going to discourage people. And we've seen it, right? These tariffs have been in place for damn near 4 years, almost five, I think now. Uh-huh. And they haven't done anything to discourage the flood of foreign urea into this marketplace. So what makes you think just taking that higher it's not going to do anything else either?
Do you know why the tariffs
don't
work?
You got to work from the end. Go ahead.
The problem, do you know why the tariffs don't work, Ryan? It's because we don't manufacture enough material within the United States. So I'm sorry, but you know, if somebody tells me, hey, I got some ammonium sulfate or from China or Israel or whatever, guess what, guys? I'm buying because I need the shit. And it's unfortunate that the politics discourage the domestic production of all of that. And, you know, going even further, Matt, do you know what other sector is hurt by the anti-manufacturing climate here in the United States? Pharmaceuticals. Because I was horrified to know that there were literally shortages of antibiotics after the COVID lockdowns were lifted and, you know, people naturally came in contact with each other and they got things like strep throat and pneumonia. And guess what? There were shortages on basic antibiotics because guess what? We only manufacture something like amoxicillin in China. How is that? How is that we manufacture basic medicines in China? There is little to no China. Domestic production of antibiotics anymore. You know, there's little to none.
But I'm not going to go there. Anyway, there's a lot. And again, and if you really want to look at the tariff hypocrisy is, look what happened to the tariffs on imported Russian fertilizer. The one where we're signed at $63 billion, but we're importing record levels of Russian fertilizer without a tariff. That's amazing. Just, it makes me want to climb out of a window of a vehicle going 190 on the interstate and just let Jesus take the wheel. Minnesota House lawmakers push forward fertilizer tax to clean up contaminated wells. Minnesota would tax farmers 40 cents per ton of fertilizer to help test and clean up thousands of private wells contaminated with agricultural runoff under a bill that cleared the House's main agricultural committee. The proposed tax is smaller than an earlier version that had called for charging up to $1 per ton in the first year and escalating after that. It comes amid demands from the EPA that state pollution regulators and the Minnesota Health Department do more to prevent nitrate pollution in 8 southeastern counties and immediately provide clean drinking water to an estimated 9,000 people who they say need a new source of water. If farmers aren't required to pay for cleaning up a problem that is largely caused by fertilizer, there'll be no incentive to change. It's not too much to ask for some responsibility. We're going to spend millions of dollars this year, public money for cleanup costs. The tax was opposed by the Republican members of the committee. It was not moved forward in the Senate, which, like the House, is DFL controlled. Lawmakers have been debating over how to pay for nitrate cleanup and emergency water provisions for 7 months. The proposed tax would redirect an existing 40 cents per ton tax on fertilizer that funds a state research program that aims to help increase crop yields. The fee raises about $1.2 million annually and is set to expire next year. They've proposed extending the research tax as it is for another 10 years. It goes on and on about it. When they're immediately pointing to that this is a fertilizer problem, it's not an erosion problem, which we all know it might be actually an erosion problem that's causing this. But, it's a lot easier to point to a single bad guy. Like, who are we just talking about? Oh, the Koch brothers, right? Koch brothers equal nitrogen equals nitrates in the groundwater equals bad, right? I mean, it's easy to draw that corollary line, okay? So, I don't think this is actually tackling the issue at hand, and there's a lot more that can be done when it comes to actually doing this, other than just taxing fertilizer and blaming fertilizer as the bad guy. We were talking about short-sighted policies earlier, and that's how it got sold to Coke. However, here we have another short-sighted policy that's going to lead to tax on farmers here that are already paying a tax because you can't import fertilizer like you used to in the United States and are bitching about the high cost of domestically manufactured. It's fucking stupid. Okay, let's check out this week's returns. I think I can't tell if I'm getting more pessimistic as it goes on, or is it easier to just see the stupidity week in and week out and be like, oh, another fucking moron. I don't know where
Matt,
I am anymore.
It's
called getting older, because when I was younger, I actually didn't look at the world the way I do now. I had a certain amount of optimism. And then you know what happened to me? My 30s hit. And I saw all of the fuckery. And I got tired of it real quick.
Really, all I'm trying to engineer here is the lowest point of your week so that everything else seems better, Matt.
I'll tell you this, Demay. I have almost gotten down. I have drank over a half gallon of Powerade Zero since we started this. So if that tells you how much of the sins I am sweating out right now, it's probably
time. Listen, anytime that you read all this bad news, the best thing that anybody can do, and this is coming directly from Matt, is to punish your renal system. That's it, right there. That'll fucking make you learn, right?
This will be 80 ounces for the end of the show here in an hour.
Better that than the brown water.
This is true.
All right, J. Pink, pull it up. I'll read this one.
Okay.
This one up. I'll read this one. All right. Let's see here. Park Rapids FFA brings home.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the one gentleman I wanted to mention here was Matthew Neubauer. Keep going down. Congratulations to all these kids. FFA competitions are tough. This guy right here, Minnesota State champion in the turf grass management category, gentlemen, gets to go to the national competition. Maybe. Maybe the future of this industry. So you got to celebrate people that take it seriously enough to study, to put the time and the effort in, have the knowledge, can demonstrate it when they need to, and get out there and kick ass. So Matthew, from three nobodies on the internet that are all in their 30s and have seemingly myopic 30s? Views about most everything. Well, you're in your 30s still, Ray. You're in your 30s still.
Am I?
Sheila keeps
biologically.
You young. Sheila keeps you young.
Biologically. I guess so.
Yeah.
There ain't too many guys there.
Did you see old boy's hands? You can't tell me this young chap here doesn't have man hands. I mean, he's got a couple baseball mitts on.
He does.
Look at him gripping that. That's my kind of corn-fed guy right there. He is. I'm glad to see he is coming up in the turf grass industry. I'd shake hands with that guy. It'd probably hurt my
better
hand.
Better than Ray Tiny Hands, right, Matt?
I thought Trump had tiny hands. I can't remember who. Someone had tiny hands. But seriously, man, congrats to this guy. Yeah. And we share a common name, so even cooler.
Even better.
I promise you, Matt, if you ever want to learn what not to do in life, reach out to me and I can put it all for you in a single journal, and you never have to worry about making catastrophic mistakes ever. Not once. I'll tell you everyone I did, and you'll actually have a nice, successful life, and I'll just cry about mine. Okay, we are going to get out of here, go and hang out with the patrons, let them choose the title of this week's episodes. A couple of housekeeping things. If you want to listen to it in podcast form, we're on all your favorite podcast apps. Number two, Yardbra is a fucking pedophile. You can check that out at yardbra.com. And number three, if you want to hang out with us, you can do so at patreon.com/burnerreturn. We'll talk to you about some of the other, you know, cool things that we have going on behind the scenes. Other than that, boys, y'all got anything else?
Nope.
No. That's it.
Then we're going to get the fuck out. Bye!